Chapter 2, Teen Whisperer. I have no idea what the literal count is, but I've seen hundreds of kids, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's in the thousands. When I say kids, I mean pretty much anyone under 30. Certainly 25, because the brain isn't even fully formed yet. Saying kid takes care of gender pronouns and age determination, which adds a layer of privacy to the stories in this book. And I mean it endearingly. I call every one of the young people I work with kid, and they get it. So anytime I say kid in this book, I mean your teenager or grown child, ages 15 to 26-ish. Even back in the early 2000s when I was an intern, I got these kids. I think it started just because supervisors thought I was energetic and pretty mouthy, and I might be able to handle teenagers. Which is how I have come to learn that many shrinks, I use this term generally for anyone with a doctoral level education in psych, so psychologists and psychiatrists alike, although they are nothing alike, but we'll get to that later. They're actually afraid to work with teenagers. I certainly have my own theories on that, but I definitely got these referrals because interns are cheap, meaning inexpensive, and I was an intern. So I was lucky enough to get trained by some super smarty pantses, very well-educated veterans in the field, psychologists, psychiatrists, MFTs, marriage and family therapists, neuropsychologists, really. Some of the best around. The place was established the year before I was born, and I was the first one to be offered a staff position in decades, I think. As I was coming up, I was seen as a go-getter who would take any case referred to me, and I now know that finding a low-cost trainee that is competent is no small feat. Hell, finding a full-fledged licensed psychologist that's competent is an accomplishment, in my opinion. I mean, think about why people go into mental health. It doesn't take letters after your name to deduce that it's probably because of some unresolved emotional issues from childhood that we wanted to figure out in undergrad and just kept going. Problem is, giving advice is not the same as listening. Thinking you're right and using fancy psych terms to intellectually justify your opinion are definitely not the same thing as connecting. It's not all just problem solving. It's meeting the person in front of you where they are and learning how to help. So while I'm not right in front of you listening to your sheer panic and sadness and guilt, I can easily validate you. And I know I can help. I pretty quickly began to develop my knowledge and skill in dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT. DBT was originally developed by Dr. Marsha Linehan for inpatient, chronically suicidal people with a borderline personality disorder, BPD, diagnosis. And how many of those do you suppose are women? Yeah, the vast majority. Big surprise to find out women are both dismissed by medical doctors, psychiatrists, and over-pathologized. Here's another news flash, too. When people are struggling and they don't get decent mental health providers, they tend to get worse. So, as self-harm is a very common symptom of BPD, and DBT was gathering steam and effectiveness treating BPD, voila. I was getting a ton of referrals for people engaging in self-harm behaviors, most commonly cutting. The psychiatrists, both in my group practice and the Berkeley Bay Area community, often referred kids to me. Despite ageism, narcissism, and sexism in the field and society in general, when they had no idea what to do with their patient, this one, but masked it with the air of, I'm doing you a huge favor. They'd also hint about not expecting me to get anywhere with the kid, but I probably couldn't screw them up more. Like adding more and more meds to the kid's daily regimen isn't tanking them already. Psychiatrists are the worst. Yeah, I know, not all psychiatrists. While we're on the topic, I've stopped calling the people I work with patients. The people that trained me operated under the medical model, and I've come to really disagree with that model. I don't believe that everyone who comes to me for help is sick. I do think they're suffering, and they don't know how to pull themselves out of it, and it's no wonder. Where did you learn in elementary school, high school, or college about how to effectively manage emotions? Yeah, nowhere. What I find is that, unlike the medical model that roots out symptoms and treats those symptoms, most people have resilience and reserves of strength that can be tapped in times of intense emotions and crisis. I also see, time and time again, that when I expect strength and an ability to tolerate pain, that's exactly what I get. When doctors expect only pathology and maladaptive symptoms from their patients, that's usually what they get. I think that's backward, and it robs people of the self-confidence points that come from weathering something difficult and scary. Inviting people to find the courage to trust themselves and use their skills builds empowerment. So I call people who work with me participants, because I demand so much courage and work from them that they deserve a more active descriptor. These kids really work hard. So here's the thing. The kids who have worked with me slowed down their self-harm behaviors, and then they stopped cutting. Over and over again, these kids, who often had a long history of cutting, depression, tanking grades, withdrawal from friends, we'd see their spark come back. I could see them smiling a little more. We'd laugh together a bit more in our work. They'd have more energy in their faces and in how they walked. Even their posture and eye contact improved. And let me tell you, when the light comes back on in the face of a kid who's been down a while, sometimes even a long while, it's a thrilling thing. I think the pilot light was still on in their heart and brain, but they've been so progressively unhappy. They got lost in it and needed some guidance to get back or forward to themselves. And then they could soar. Clinically, I've seen kids in really dark places, so dark it scares parents to death. And cutting has a weird secrecy around it that no one really has words for, regular words that help us all really understand, not just medical words that make a doctor look smarter. I go looking for the kid. I listen, like really listen, to what they have to say about it and many other things, like music and video games, their friends, their clothes, memes, you know, the stuff that's important when you're that age. You remember, right? Yeah, that's the thing. Teenagers and young adults believe they are chronically dismissed by adults. I happen to agree with that. As a society, we do dismiss them. We blow off what young people have to say. They don't have the experience in life to have built credibility like adults, so they're treated more like children, which they also definitely are not. Yet what I see more and more is that though they're not taken seriously for their ideas, they are held to responsibilities, especially around academic achievements, that are definitely more pressure than anyone should put on a kid. Also, with the politics of today being in the forefront, they have way more grown-up worries than they used to bear, but the same amount of dismissal and lack of voice as before. These kids are stressed. They are self-harming in all kinds of ways, including cutting. The last reason I think I've been so successful in treating kids that hurt themselves is because, as you've probably guessed, when I was young, I dabbled in cutting myself. No one ever caught me, but I remember the intense emotions I had as a young person. I remember having no real tools to cope with all those really strong emotions. And I didn't tell anyone, so I was alone with it. It sucked. And now I can use that to help young people learn tools to cope with anything they're feeling. And they can use those tools instead of cutting. And instead of feeling the sadness and shame that self-harm brings, they can feel proud of themselves for choosing the healthy alternatives that I teach them. I actually am grateful for that turbulent time because now I have this deep understanding of pain, self and other inflicted. I have had the profound privilege of using that knowledge to help kids of all ages not only stop hurting themselves, but start liking themselves enough to know they deserve healthy alternatives to coping with life.